came to KITC in Santa Barbara and stayed there until 2008. And then since then, he's working at Oakley. And since I have done a lot of interesting work on corporate translator, disorder systems, and application of ADSFC to corporate cartesis in conditional systems, application of attainable technology, and the idea of ADSFT, and today, since it's going to tell us about quantum spin hole, like schema, durability of a quantum spin hole.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Sensei Liu. So it's such an honor to be a first speaker in conditional matter seminar. So today, I'm going to tell about the physics of topological effect in topological or semi-topological systems in condensed matter, such as quantum spin hole effect. And so here the list of collaborators. So I work closely in the group in Berkeley, as well as people at Boston University in these groups. So the purpose of my talk today is to looking at the topological defect in topological phases, to deepen our understanding on topological phases in conditional matter. But we actually ended up finding many application of these ideas in graphene, which is not strictly speaking a topological system, but it still carries out the interesting topological characters. And we ended up finding many links to experiments in the thing. Okay. So I think I see mixed audience from condensed matter or from other field of physics. So please do interrupt whenever you have questions. Okay, so the topological phases, which I have in mind in this talk, is they all pretty much non-interrupting. So these include integer quantum Hall effect and quantum spin Hall effect and so on and so forth. So the, among the topological phases, the most oldest, the oldest and the most well-known example is the integer quantum Hall effect. So it is realized in the two-dimensional electron system under strong magnetic field. So the most striking feature of the integer quantum Hall effect is that it quantizes transport. So here it's a caricature of the integer quantum Hall effect. So here it's a transverse conductance as a function of magnetic field. So we see many plateaus. So it's a state characterized by this integer value theta x1. Okay. So if you look at the integer quantum Hall effect is a gap phase of matter. So basically there's not many excitation in the bulk. I mean no excitation in the bulk. But it turns out whenever you have a boundary in the integer quantum Hall system, there appears the states at the boundary, the localized boundary. And although the bulk is completely gapped, the boundary state, or edge state in this case, is completely gapless. So so here the integer quantum Hall effect, which is completely gapped by applied magnetic field. But at the boundary, there is this H mode, which is fully directional. So here I have just one such H mode, but in principle, you can have integer number of H modes, just one, two, three. So you can just count the number of H modes, and it is integer, which is actually the secret of having quantized quantum transport in integer quantum Hall effect. Okay, so in short, integer quantum Hall effect is a gap phase of the matter, and it is characterized by integer invariant, which is the sigma xy, or the number of H mode flowing along this sample bound. Okay. But in terms of topological defect, in this talk, I'm more interested in the quantum spin Hall effect, which is a recently discovered state, which is a close cousin of integer quantum Hall effect, but also it is different from the integer quantum holography in many essential ways. Okay, so the most striking feature of the quantum spin holography is that it can be realized in time reverse symmetric system. So you don't have to apply strong magnetic field. Now, so that the kind of easy way to visualize quantum spin Hall effect is just to take two integer quantum Hall effect, one for spin up and the other for spin down, and we just glue them together. Okay. So here's the picture. So we have a one quantum Hall effect, and because of the quantum Hall effect, we have an up spin, let's say, flowing in this direction. I have another quantum Hall effect, to keep the whole system time reverse symmetric, I somehow imagine in a fictitious way, I apply the magnetic field in the opposite direction. And there's an integer quantum Hall effect, so the up-down spin is flowing in this direction. Now, as in the integer quantum Hall effect, quantum spin Hall effect is a fully gapped state of matter. So again, I don't see any state in the Birch spectrum, but whenever I have a boundary, as before, there is a state appearing at the boundary of the quantum spin Hall system. Okay. So in the presence of time reverse asymmetry, these two edge modes, one for spin up and the other for spin up, they form a Kramer sphere. They are related by time reverse asymmetry. Okay. And because of the time reverse asymmetry, it turns out you cannot get rid of this pair of edge modes away. So you can imagine disturbing your system by adding potential, or you can change some parameters in the Birch Hamiltonian. But whatever you do, as far as you keep time reverse asymmetry, these pair of H mode, they never go away. So it is the robust feature of the quantum spin Hall effect, and by this presence of the robust Kramer sphere of H state, we can distinguish this state from the more conventional trivial instead. Okay. Now things get interesting if you have a multiple such Kramer spheres. As before, in principle, I can imagine having multiple branches of H mode. So I have here, I have two such Kramer spheres, and here I have three. Now, again, we try to do the same thing. Since if this is a topological state, whatever you do to the system, you can disturb your system in whatever you want. But then, if it is a topological state, this state shouldn't work. But it turns out, if you have two Kramer spheres, there's a way to pair and annihilate these Kramer spheres. So in that case, this is actually the case with two Kramer spheres is not topological. Because you can remove the boundary degrees of freedom, and then you can continuously change your state into the trivial instrument, the conventional bound instrument. But now if you have three such Kramer spheres, what you can do is to pair and annihilate, let's say, these two or these two, but there's always one Kramer sphere remaining, which is always gapless if there's a time reverse asymmetry. So in the quantum spin Hall effect, unlike in the integer quantum Hall effect, the counting of the H mode, it has a binary character. So integer quantum Hall effect is a state characterized by an integer invariant. But because of this pair annihilation mechanism, quantum spin Hall effect is a topological phase characterized by Z2 number. Okay. So that is the striking difference from the integer quantum case. So now, so much for the Birch topological phases, but now I want to introduce topological defects in these topological systems. So before describing the details how I introduce such defect into the system, I just want to have a very kind of general discussion what I could expect for such system in the presence of topological. So why such topological defect can be interesting in topological places? Okay, so let me again start from the integer quantum Hall effect. So in integer quantum Hall effect, what happens is that if you apply electric field in this direction, there's a current flowing the direction which is perpendicular to that applied electric field. So that is the quantum Hall effect, which is a phenomenon. But now let's take the kind of electromagnetic dual of this picture. So instead of applying electric field, let's now apply magnetic field. Okay. Now in this case, I consider a localized magnetic flux, which is like a very small solenoid, threading this plane, which is a quantum Hall grid. What happened in this case is that if you thread this flux tube, actually it accumulates a charge. Now, the way to understand is the following. So, this quantum Hall effect is an incompressible state of matter. So, it's yucked everywhere, and the electron density is closely tied to the magnetic field in such a way that the ratio between magnetic flux and the number of electrons is fixed. By inserting this magnetic flux, we kind of try to destroy this behavior. So locally, magnetic field is strong here. But it turns out quantum fluid actually follow the density of the magnetic flux. So you have either a depletion of the charge, or you have accumulation of the charge. And what is striking in the integer quantum Hall effect is that for the one flux momentum, you move any unit of charge. Okay, so here's the notion of quantization. If you know about the Chan-Simon theory, a very convenient way to understand this is that if you take suppose integer quantum Hall effect is actually described by Chan-Simon theory at low energies. Okay, so from the Chan-Simon effective action, we can compute the current by taking the derivative of the action with respect to the spatial component of the gauge field, which gives me the gauge field with temporal derivative, which is electric field. But now, if you take the functional derivative with respect to the temporal component of the gauge field, which gives me the charge. But in this case, we get the magnetic field appearing here. So it's compactly described by quantum Hall effect. But now I want to move on to the quantum spin Hall effect, which is my main interest today. So in quantum spin Hall effect, charge and spin degrees of freedom are strongly coupled. And now what happens is that if I apply electric field this way, I induce a current related spin. So here, actually, I'm assuming the spin quantum number in some direction, let's say z direction, is conserved. If you know a lot about quantum spin Hall effect, that is not actually necessary, but let me just fine-tune my Hamiltonian in such a way that spin quantum number is conserved. So in that particular situation, introducing electric field in this direction induces a current spin current in the direction perpendicular to the electric field. Now, the spin and charge in quantum spin Hall effect are quite democratic, and you can actually exchange charge and spin. So imagine you have an electric field. It's a gradient for the moment carried by spin. So if I have an electric field for spin degrees freedom, actually it induces the charge current in the direction perpendicular to the applied spin current. Okay. Now, as before, let's take the electromagnetic dual of this picture. In this case, I don't introduce electric field, but I introduce flux or magnetic field. Now, quite analogously to the integer quantum Hall effect, introducing the charge flux induces the accumulation or depletion of the spin quantum number. Yes?
I just had a question on this interesting.
Yes.
Experimentally, how would you introduce a spin electric field?
Right. So that's something we don't have in nature. But in principle, what we can do is that since the spin couples to magnetic field by Zeeman coupling, you can make a gradient in Zeeman field, which kind of mimics a spin gauge field. Yes, that's one way to do it. So, but here I want to apply something like a spin flux, which is probably more difficult to do, but let's just a matter of principle. Let's do that here. So I introduced a spin flux, which is the magnetic flux twisting the boundary condition, of the electron depending on its spin direction. Then we this time we accumulate the electric charge. So that's something we can expect from the phenomenology of the quantum spin Hall effect. Just from this picture, and knowing the integer quantum Hall effect, we expect something like this. So somehow, for the quantum spin Hall effect, we it seems like the defect, Poincaré defect, like this, can have a more structure than integer quantum Hall effect. That is the story I want to tell you today. Although, these pictures are not exactly the way I introduced the topological defect in the system that I will describe in a minute. Okay? So the question is really the following. So in quantum spin Hall effect, there are more degrees of freedom, and in this particular case, spin and charge are very closely tied. But why is this that? Okay. So that is my question. So I want to get more insight into this issue. But once we understand this issue, one can also ask the question, why charge and spin are so special? Because in condensed matter, we have more quantum numbers, like orbiters, orbital quantum numbers, or varied quantum numbers, which I will introduce later in the context of graphene physics. Okay. And also I will show you how the close relation between two quantum numbers show up in the physics of. So now I want to introduce how I want to explain how I introduce the topological defect in terms of more microscopic model. So this time I take a model on the Hamilton lattice. So electrons are hopping on the Hamilton lattice. Now the electrons hopping on the Hamilton lattice is a little bit different from the electrons hopping on the more conventional setting. So what's special about this honeycomb lattice or graphene lattice is that if you sort out the energy spectrum, so here is the momentum space. So we have a finite region of the Brillouin zone because of the periodicity of the lattice. I have a point where energy vanishes linearly as a function of k, here and here. So, in short, we actually realize this relativistic particle in graphene. So we have two such kind of particles at these two points, k and k prime. So graphene kinetic term schematically looks like this. So it's a 4x4 Hamiltonian for each spin, and I have a Dirac particle here at k. And there's another Dirac cone at k prime. But since graphene is a gapless system, now I want to make fermions gap by introducing some mass terms, right? So I want to perturb, because this is not topological system yet. So I want to introduce some mass term. So the way I make fermions gap, well, actually there are several ways of doing this. So if I introduce a particular pattern of hopping, so here I have a second level hopping with imaginary amplitude. That breaks T, and it turns out it makes fermions gap, and at simultaneously, actually we get quantum Hall effect that was found well before, like in 1988 or something. So this is the, we can basically, generate quantum Hall effect in graphene lattice. Okay. Now there's another interesting way to get fermions, which is the quantum spin Hall effect. So remember, quantum spin Hall effect is like a hybrid system of a quantum Hall effect with opposite chiralities. Okay. So just by considering this particular quantum Hall effect. Is opposite chirality for spin up and spin down. Actually, we can realize quantum spin Hall effect in graphene, that is. And historically, this was originally postulated, this was the first postulated example of quantum spin Hall effect. It was actually on graphene, but it turns out in real graphene, the magnitude of this quantum spin whole mass term is very small, but here, actually, in principle, I want to take this mass term. There are also other mass terms as well. So one is the bond order. So here you can make modulation in terms of bond strength. So let's say this is strong weak. In this particular pattern, it caps at fermions. Okay. There are other on-site order which actually gap fermions out. So here I have a density modulation. Here I have more fermions. Here I have a depletion of fermions, and so on and so forth. Okay. So actually, one might wonder. Okay, there are so many ways to gap fermions out. Actually, how many ways to gap fermions? Here's the simple answer for this. Actually, in graphene, that is, there are 36. So we just basically require the kinetic term of the graphene lattice anti-commute with some mass matrix that guarantees the presence of the gap. And under such condition, we can figure out all possible order parameters in graphene, which gives rise to the through mass gap in the graphene lattice. Okay, so I introduced several of them, and I did not introduce one of them, but many of them actually look familiar. Now I come to the point to introduce the topological effect. So I want to take several masses. It's there like a vector valued order parameter, 2, 3, 4. Actually, the number really don't matter here, but just for concreteness, let me take 3 such order parameters. Now with 3 such parameters, let's say I have a quantum spin hole. Here for the example, I have 3 quantum spin hole masses. So this quantum spin hole mass I already introduced, it's a quantum hole effect for up spin, and it is the opposite quantum hole spin for down spin, but I can rotate spin direction, so I get in total 3 independent quantum spin hole masses. But now, with multi-component order parameter or multi-component masses, I can consider a texture or defect in the order parameter. Okay, so I want to make this coefficient space dependent, and I can modulate these vectors from point to point. But since I want to keep fermions basically gapped, I want to make the magnitude of this, they don't vanish except at some defects. So fermions are basically everywhere gapped, but at some point fermion might be gapless when there's the topological defect in the three component of the parameter. Okay, so here's a very definite question. So it seems like I have 36 masses, and I can take, in principle, 3 masses out of 36 possibilities. I can make a topological defect. And the question is, when the topological defect actually traps the charge? So that is that is something I demonstrated in terms of the phenomenology of the quantum spin effect before. So the defect can trap the charge, but we ask a question. When that can happen, okay? So that is a question. And the another question is that, suppose that happens, what types of the charge I can trap, right? So in the quantum spin Hall effect, it was the electric charge which was trapped at the defect of the quantum spin Hall effect. But I have now many such defects. I have many ways to create the defect, okay? So there's the simple answer for this question, okay? And so we actually,
if you go back one slide, Can you say something more about this order parameter? One thing is, why is it, you have it as sort of three-dimensional, but in the picture it looks like it's a vector in 2 dimensions.
Yes, so actually, so this is an in-plane configuration I'm showing. So here, I'm kind of projected this three-component vector onto the plane, but what I really mean is that so I think I didn't explain the detail of the texture. So for example, I want to make a vortex. In that case, I switch off this third component, and I just have a winding in terms of the direction in M1 and M2. I can also make something called hedgehog effect, where it's basically doing winding in the first and second component, but also subcomponents can point several directions. Let's say at the core, it's pointing north. or maybe pointing the south, but you can, this can also gradually get tilted as you go away from the defect. So that's a typical type of defect I have in mind.
Okay, and, so, and physically, what would this order parameter be? I mean,
that's actually a change in the spin direction, because here, this is associated with a particular direction of spin. Although this is not the magnetic, on-site magnetic order parameter, but you are tilting the spin direction, basically, in this particular example. Yeah, I think I have more examples here. Yeah.
I mean, is this the same Hamiltonian you wrote down before?
Yes, but this is only for the last term. So I have a kinetic term as well. So I am considering kinetic term in the presence of defect represented by this term. Okay, so actually I should point out these are the same statistics.
So what does this represent? You say it represents a spin, local spin, or?
So
it's a local order parameter.
So it's a local order parameter. So it's related to spin direction. So these vectors, it has a sense of direction related to spin. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly a magnetic order, strictly speaking, because it is actually, I mean, in effect, this is a quantum spin for effect, which is not magnetic order. Mm-hmm. But it's doing twisting spins.
This indirection term is just, it's just the same question that Neil asked. Is it just a consequence of the other interactions that these mass things that you introduced?
Yes,
is it a further term that you've added to the?
Yeah, so I'm here introducing these defects by hand. Okay. So I'm not I'm making defects statistically, which I can do, for example, in superconductor, which I have mentioned in the lecture. Mm.
So in the context of the graphene.
Yes.
This is the spin of what?
This is spin of electrons. But as I said earlier, since in graphene, the magnitude of these are very, very small. That's not practical. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking here just as an example. But in graphene, we have the other set of mass terms, which is actually physical remnants. Mm-hmm. So it's actually just electron spin. So let me rephrase the question. So we make a defect, and the question is, where do I see something abnormal at the defect? Right. The condition is actually very simple. So take other two masses in total. So I have five masses in total. So these two masses I introduced here for really just be a fictitious one. It's not making a texture, but it turns out it is useful to figure out the type of jerk. So we just take a commutation relation. So these masses must anti-commute with each other. I have a file on them. So if this condition is satisfied, the texture or defect in the first three components, they drop a jerk. The question about the type of jerk, we just check the U1 rotation, rotating this fourth and fifth mass. There's always such a generator. And this generator is actually the quantum number associated with the texture. So here's an example. So I took quantum spin Hall effect in X and Y and Z direction. So I make a texture. What happens? Do we drop something? Well, you can actually find the superconductivity mass term and the other part, there's the ideal part and imaginary part. So these are the two masses and the U1 rotation derating these two masses is nothing but the electromagnetic U1. That means when the texture or defect in this quantum spin Hall mass must drop a one electric charge. So that is the example. And I don't go into the detail of the derivation, but the derivation you can here it's a pure theoretical derivation. Okay, but I think it's more instructive to showing more examples to convince you that this is really working. So once you know the condition, you can just go ahead and you just try to find all five masses which are commute with each other out of 336 mass terms, and there are many of them. So there is some number which might amuse you. So we take 36 masses and we choose five. But it turns out there's only 56 sets of 5 anti-commuting masses. So it turns out there's 56 possibilities of having such physics. So the one example I already mentioned, so quantum spin Hall masses, they anti-commute with each other, and in addition to that, they also anti-commute with superconducting masses. So the texture here traps a charge of the charge related to this mass, and also the here bond density wave and the charge density wave, they are related to the superconducting order parameter. So you can make a, if you make a defect in superconductivity, it traps a charge related to this. Okay. And it turns out integer quantum Hall mass term, it commutes with everything. So it really, there's no way to make a defect in terms of masses or order parameters in integer quantum Hall effect. So as I said, quantum spin Hall effect has more structure, more ways to introduce defects. I also wanted, yes?
No, I was hoping you were going to connect this to transimus theory.
Right, yeah, so that's actually here. That is the part I tried to skip, but you don't let me so. So the quantum Hall effect can be summarized by transimus action. But here, it is basically just like a mutual transimus theory or double transimus theory. So you have a transimon theory, the gauge field for charge and gauge field for spin, but since you introduce defect in some way, it somehow hicks out some gauge degrees of freedom. But this is again actually captured by this thing. So this is the this is, I think, a confusing notation, but this is one type of so here I have a one U1 gauge field and one SU2 gauge field. So I have in total four gauge field. This is one U1 gauge field and I have a SU2 gauge field. But these SU2 gauge fields are working in the presence of defect, some background condensate. So there's the Higgs contribution coming from this defect. So I have parameterized my other parameter N1, N2, N3, which previously was in the example I explained, there are quantum spin Hall masses, which are the three component, which is here N1, N2, N3, and I parameterize my masses in a certain way. So that's basically the effective action where you can lead off the response of the quantum spin Hall effect in the presence of defect. One interesting application of this effective Higgs theory is that you can actually compute the charge trapped by the defect. So here I explain the way I make a defect. So it's a defect, so it's a winding, but if you can also introduce a third component which is pointing up here. But the relative magnitude of the third component and the first and second component, you can continuously change. Now, what turns out is that if N3 component is strictly zero, so if it is like a real vortex in U1 order parameter, you actually trap a unit charge. Okay? But if you make the third component arrive, and if your third component is pointing, let's say, up straight a little bit, at the core, the charge actually continuously changes as a function of the third component at the core. That's something you can compute from the effective function. So now I want to look at the defect in the wider context. So topological phases in non-conducting system are pre-classified in terms of dimensionality, in terms of spatial dimensionality, and in terms of the symmetry you have to input in the Hamiltonian. So remember, for the quantum spin Hall effect, I needed the time reversal symmetry. But in more general context, I can impose time reversal symmetry or particle Hall symmetry, which is important in superconducting system. So I can consider several different discrete symmetries. And we have a tabulated topological phases here. Just to illustrate how does this work, let me show you examples. So we have seen integer quantum Hall effect, which exists in two spatial dimensions with magnetic field, so there's no time reversal symmetry. So actually this A, sorry, this is a jargon, so it's very difficult to understand, but each different symbol represents different type of symmetry. And A simply means there's no symmetry at all. In two dimensions, we have an integer quantum Hall effect. Here, A2 means the system with time reversal symmetry. And in two dimensions, we have a quantum spin Hall effect, which is labeled by a binary number. Okay, and we have a, so we just looked at these two examples, but I'm just trying to say they're a much wider class of topological phases. And what happens for the other topological phases? And in particular, I'm interested in here in three dimensions. Okay, so in three dimensions, for example, we have a heading 3B, that is one topological phase, but also we have here, which is the three-dimensional topological phase in time-reversal symmetric superconducting, the single superconducting system. That's one phase. Okay, so in terms of wider range of topological phase, how the defect physics I described, do they still work in three-dimensional model? So here I think I just tell the result. So we can again do the same thing. So we classify all the parameters possible in the
Can you say a little more about the last slide? What are you actually classifying there? What's your starting point? Are you some effective field series or?
That's the microscopic Hamiltonian, but which is quadratic infermion operator, and there is the space dimension we have to input. So it's like a. Here, by changing dimension, I have a fermions hopping on the two-dimensional lattice, three-dimensional lattice, and so on and so forth. And also, we require time-reversal symmetry, particle Hall symmetries, such kind of discrete symmetries. So here, I have a different type of discrete symmetry. Sorry, I haven't
explained. So you classify possible Lagrangians for a Fermi field?
It's more like a ground state, actually. So take one, let's say Lagrangian, let's say, and then you have a ground state. I assume a gap. Yeah, so I assume a gap phase of matter. But then question is, for a given Lagrangian, you have a ground state, which is separated by a gap to the other excitation. Can you continuously change your ground state into different ground state? Is that possible at all? But sometimes that's not possible because there is a phase transition that separates two phases. So that's basically, this symbol says if this is Z, there are integer number labeled many such phases, they are each separated by quantum phase transition. If this is zero, all states are continuously deformable without going through the phase transition. And the quantum spin Hall effect is a D2 state, so there are only basically two such states. One is Kramers sphere, and the other Kramers sphere of each state, and the other without Kramers sphere of each state, they must be separated by quantum phase transition. But otherwise, other states are connected within each D2 state.
Okay, but how do you actually do the classification? Do you assume some generic form of a Hamiltonian, of a Lagrangian, and then find the ground state?
Or? Right. So we assume locality because that's necessary to define dimensions. And otherwise, it's very general, only symmetry. But that's, I think, I can talk about later, probably. Yeah. So in 3D, again, we start from the Dirac Hamiltonian, and I gap out these fermions. And in that case, something interesting happened. So, for example, the bond density wave, which I show you in the graphene lattice, which is, in some sense, dual to the magnetic order, meaning the texture in the bond density wave traps spin. And at the same time, texture in spin traps the charge-related variance of this bond density wave. Now, in 3D, these topological phases tabulated here, they're dual to tied to interesting order parameter, which among which The most interesting to me is this six set of order parameter, actually six set of order parameter, because this is superconductor. I have a real and imaginary part. So here, if you make a spin texture in three components, the magnetic order, at the core of such magnetic topological defect, we trap the charge related to the topological single superconductor and topological insulator. So here in 3D, magnetic order is due to some topological order. Okay, so it seems like even for higher dimension, even in different symmetric gas, topological phases seems to relate to interesting defects. So now that I go back to two dimensions, and I want to focus more on graphene physics, because graphene physics seems to be very realizable. So now let's take these five order parameters which I found in the exhaustive search of the duality. Okay, so here I have a valence bond, sorry. I have a strong bond here, weak bond here, strong bond here, and I have two complementary patterns. I have a two-dimensional vector order parameter for the bond density wave, which I call the real part of BBS and imaginary part of BBS. Imagining this BBS order parameter is like a complex order parameter. Okay? And I have a superconducting, singlet S-wave superconductivity order parameter of mechanical lattice. And also I have a charge density wave, which is the imbalance of the charge density between A and B sub. Now, we found out that these five matrices, they anti-commute with each other. And such system actually can be quite realizable in a sense that people use superconducting proximity effect to induce superconductivity in graphene frames. So there's a couple of experiments going on in this direction. So since graphene itself is relatively weak. I mean, it's not strictly speaking, it's weak in graphene, but pairing in the graphene frame by itself, it seems to be very weak. But because of the proximity effect, you can just put some superconductor here and here, let's say, and it was observed that supercurrent is actually flowing in graphene frame. So here, this is the superconducting TC of this metallic electrode, but if you put this on graphene and monitoring the supercurrent, transition happening in graphene at a different TC. But anyway, people are really trying to make superconducting contact in graphene device. But since we have a graphene, since we have a superconducting order parameter which is dual to this bond density wave or valence bond solid order parameter, we ask what is the experimental implication for that. Okay? So now, in superconductivity, there is a natural way to create a defect, which is just by introducing a superconducting vortex by applying a magnetic field. So let's say we have a vortex here, which is a core. So let me explain the structure of the core in more detail. Okay. So as I said earlier, because of the principle I explained, the core of superconductivity must trap a charge of some sort. And charge in this case relates to the charge defined by two Dirac cones, K and K prime. Okay? So charge is like a SU2 charge. So this Q1, Q2, Q3, they represent a charge trapped by the superconducting order parameter. And these Q1, Q2, Q3 have a specific physical meaning. So Q1 is actually the Q1 direction actually means we have a bond density order. And Q2 is the complementary pattern to this bond density order parameter. And there is the sub direction, which is the imbalance of the charge density in A and B sublattice. So this is a silicon component pseudo spin, which is floating around at the core of superconducting graphene. So actually, we can actually directly observe such a floating charge at the core. So here we just look at numerically the spectrum of the graphene, superconducting graphene with a single vortex. And unfortunately, here it's a little bit difficult to see, but the bond strength, the expectation value of the bond density is actually modulated. So it's strong around the core, but as you go away from the core, it gets weak and weak. So you can see it directly, let's say by SPM. Okay. Now something more interesting can happen if you put supercurrent in y direction. Okay, oh, sorry. So here, just by applying supercurrent in this direction, actually whole texture gets shifted to the right or gets shifted to the left depending on the direction of the supercurrent. So this is the analogous effect to the quantum spin hole effect that happening in the superconducting graphene. So in quantum spin hole effect, charge and spin degrees of freedom are coupled together. But here, charge and the pseudo-spin degrees of freedom, pseudo-spin is here, which is related to then bond density and charge density. These 2 degrees of freedom are closely tied together. And actually, you can manipulate this texture just by applying supercurrent. Okay, so again, this has to be a very clear signature in terms of experimental implication. Okay, so the final topic I want to mention is the actually inverse of the effect that I just described. So in quantum spin hole, spin and charge degrees of freedom are democratic. So last time I make a texture vortex here, but I can also make a defect in the bond density web as well. Okay. So the, my proposal is that this is actually already observed in the graphene in strong magnetic. So what happens in graphene if there's a strong magnetic field? Well, there's a Randall quantization in graphene. So there we have a Randall quantization of energy levels, which is slightly different from the conventional quantum Hall effect because underlying particles have a relativistic energy dispersion. But nevertheless, we observe this Randall quantization and also the integer quantum Hall effect in graphene. So far, everything is non-graph. But now, as you make the magnetic field stronger and stronger, what happens is that basically you are quenching your energy, the kinetic energy, because, well, these bands are really flat. There's no basically kinetic energy. So at some point, interaction effect must kick in. Okay, so what people observe is the splitting of the Landau levels in graphene in strong magnetic field. So originally we have a degenerate Landau level, but at some point by the Coulomb effect, these two states get lifted. Okay. So our proposal here is that actually the splitting is due to the spontaneously spontaneous symmetry breaking in terms of bond ordering. Okay. So why I'm expecting this? So here's the experiment. So I'm applying a magnetic field in graphene and I keep my electron density near here. Okay. So because it's the energy levels at the Fermi level, in the non-interacting picture, it must be conducting. But as I crank up the magnetic field, okay, I see metallic behavior, resistivity is zero, resistance is zero here basically, so it's a metal. But at some point, the resistance becomes diverging large. Okay, so something must be happening here. So it must be a correlation. I mean, reasonable guess is that it's a correlation effect. Okay, there's another interesting piece of information. So let's see the scaling of the resistance as a function of applied magnetic field, and it shows a Costell-Saurus scaling. Okay, so it's actually very good. So over 3 decades, we see this type of Costell-Saurus scaling. So something is happening clearly here, and what is in question is the nature of the ground state. which was metallic in the absence of interaction, but now we have an interaction. So, guided by the Costa-Savarese behavior, we propose that the ground state realized in the graphene in high magnetic field is actually the one of the masses we proposed. So it's a spontaneous condensation of these other parameters. Okay. So the reason is very, very simple. So let's assume we have a spontaneous condensation of these masses. But now but since it is a two-dimensional system, some fluctuation can introduce the defect in the other parameter for the pseudo spin. For the two component XY type order parameter, it takes a form of vortex. Okay, but now what is different from the conventional KD behavior is that these vortices are charged, so it carries actually electric field. Okay, so KD behavior is seen in defect, but in this particular case, since vortices are charged, they must carry charge. They must carry current. Therefore, it must show up in the scaling of resistance as a KD type behavior. So that is a very simple picture. So based on this picture, we did some mean field type calibration, but that's not important here. So let's skip this part. But there's a final point I want to emphasize. So this is pretty much like a superconducting system, okay? In the sense that I have a two component order parameter, which spontaneously break the 2-1 symmetry, and at low temperature, there's a thermally activated vortices, which kind of move around superconducting sample. But for superconducting systems, they are not charged. So what's happening in superconductor is that supercurrent or Cooper pair, they are charged, okay? But now vortex, they are moving by thermal fluctuation, they can be unbound, but they are not charged, so they don't carry current. What is happening in graphene in B field is exact opposite of this, okay? So vortex current is charged, so they carry current, but the other parameter current is charge neutral because it's a bond density wave. It's not Cooper pair. So it's happening, it's exact opposite is happening. So in superconducting same film, it is known that sigma XX shows the KT behavior, but since it is opposite here, a low XX actually shows the KT behavior. So that's our scenario, in short. Okay, so I started from the defect physics in topological phases. We figured out some rule to predict the charge trapped by the defect, and it turns out we predict a very clear effect in terms of superconducting graphene, where we can move around the texture just by clamping up the supercurrent that can be observed easily by experiment. And also for the existing experiment for the graphene in magnetic field, we propose that the charge carrier in the graphene in magnetic field is a vortex in terms of bond density wave that can be again checked by other experiments which we are thinking about. And I think there's one interesting question left for the future is the effect of more dynamical questions, okay? So here, pretty much I'm making a defect by hands, like a superconducting proximity effect. I apply electric field, magnetic field, make a vortex. But kind of they are all pretty much controlled. But vortices, anti-vortices, they can be created dynamically, okay, near the transition. And what can happen? I don't know yet, but that sounds a very interesting question. Okay, thank you very much for attention.
Any question?
So can you say something more about the SDN thing you just mentioned, which can mirror the valence bound solid pattern around the vortex core of superconducting?
Right.
Can you estimate the order of magnitude, like what's the ratio between the density of states or for the strong bound or weak bound?
Yeah, so that's we didn't estimate actually seriously. Well, I think, I guess first thing to do is to just observe the splitting here. So we have a core state, uh-huh. which is, I mean, there are two states per core.
And how big is that, estimate?
The splitting? Yeah. Yeah, so this splitting actually, of course, directly related to the magnitude you induce.
Alright.
So, actually, it might be very small ideally.
Suppose we make like a standard superconduction, like a 10 Kelvin DC or something. So
that's actually, I don't know, but it also depends on the substrate, because substrate can induce the sound component, of, I mean, the like a silicon carbide, you can introduce charge imbalance, which can spread this thing. So, but I think in terms of experiment, doing a single core without any supercurrent should be easier. And there's many experimenters looking at the core, and we can see nearly degenerate, they can be spread, but some state must be there, so that's...
Sure,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. In terms of, magnitude, I don't know.
Yeah. So, if you write down non-linear super model for those parameters,
yeah.
You expect to have some approach current?
Right. That's right. So that's something I didn't explain. So actually that was used to deduce the existence of the charge at the core. So how do I figure out these rules? We figure out these rules by demanding that if you write down the nonlinear signal model, as you say, it must have a topological term, a Wiesen-Zumino-Witten term in the nonlinear signal model. So yeah, so for these five pairs, we get the Wiesen-Zumino-Witten term because it's an awful vector. So it's a four component vector. So the other parameter space is S4, which has a linear integer winding for the four-dimensional space, which means the existence of Wiesen-Zumino-Witten term in 3 plus 1 dimension. So that's basically how we get it.
I have a couple of very simple-minded questions, just on the structure of graphene. So graphene is what? It's some lattice of carbon atoms?
Or? Yeah, arranged in hexagonal way.
And
right. And the electrons are hopping on these hexagonal lattice. Right.
And where do these electrons come from?
That's a pi orbital of the, it's a carbon, so it has a sp3 structure. So you use some electrons to make these bonds, but there's one pi electron floating around. Okay. So that's kind of, sometimes you can picture like some orbitals pointing in out-of-plane direction. But since the orbiter is pointing in the out-of-plane direction, it doesn't contribute to making a bond. It can still hop around.
And when you talk about a bond density wave, you're talking about the electrons in the orbitals that are in the plane moving around, basically? Is that what it amounts to?
Right, right. So that's about the electron hopping on there. Yeah.
I mean, there's two different sets of electrons involved.
That's right. That's
one
right.
is in the
in
bonds,
the core, yeah. And the other is...
The other one
right,
sticking
right.
out in their half in
right.
orbitals that stick out.
Right. And so that I'm also interested in the second set of electrons, which is hopping.
But these bonds density waves involve the dynamics of the ones that are in the. Is that right? I mean, so somehow you're coupling the ones that are in the plane to the ones that are
sticking
out.
I think I treat this more like just a phonon type. Degrees of freedom, so it's just a stretching and a bond, but
so
periodic nature probably doesn't show up much.
So it's the moving of the, what's really happening is the motion of the nuclei of the
exactly.
carbon
right.
atoms.
Right.
And they're being coupled somehow to them. I mean, when you say that the vortex traps the charge or something like that, this is coupling between the phonons or these motions and the electrons.
That's actually a good question. So when I'm talking about the bond density wave, it is the wave in terms of electrons hopping, in terms of these phonons. Mm. But phonons are actually strongly coupled to this bond motion of the orbital electrons.
So when you add the mass term,
right,
that's an additional term in the sample term?
Yes, that's the additional
you're
term.
Just, you're just adding it by hand? And
I'm adding by hand.
Arbitrary matrix?
These electrons are somehow massless. They have relativistic energy momentum relations.
Yes.
So, but the speed of light is not the normal speed of light.
That's right. Exactly. It's like a 1/300 of the speed of light.
Is it possible to examine? So there's a kind of a Lorentz invariance effect.
At low energy, yes.
At low energy. Is it possible to investigate how that is broken or deformed as you go to higher energy?
So ultraviolet effect is kind of important here. The way to see kind of weak breaking of the Lorentz invariance is something called the warping, because Dirac-Cohn is isotropic in any direction. But the original lattice has a threefold rotation symmetry. Mm-hmm. So as you go up in energy, these cones actually get distorted and it look more like triangular in terms of energy contour. That's the effect. I mean, that's something you can easily see. And it's such effect is also called the warping. So
that's just breaking a rotational invariance. I think he's talking about breaking boost invariance.
Boost
invariance.
The question is, can you characterize sort of the first order in your lattice spacing times this speed? What how soft or how hard is the breaking of Lorentz invariance?
Actually, if you turn on cooling factor in the system, it should always there. Boosting invariance already broken by cooling factor.
That's true. Coulomb
interaction.
Coulomb interaction.
Yes.
Electron interaction, because it showed the it's for the electrodynamics, so it doesn't, So I guess what you can imagine doing is to include the curvature correction, order by order, in some quantities, like a conductivity and so on and so forth. But if it is directly related to the boost invariance breaking, I think I need to disentangle this effect in some ways that I'm not sure, but I think that's something doable, probably.
If there is no further question, let's thank you.